Big show for you here today. Dane Brugler of The Athletic joins us to cap off a fantastic year of Mock Draft Monday. He has got some awesome offensive players headed to some very fascinating spots. You've heard Ashton Jeanty going to the Raiders. You ain't going to hear it on this episode. He's got a very fascinating spot for Jeanty to land into. Plus, Dane stands on the table for one of my favorite receiver prospects, and I didn't even ask him to do it. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, April 21st. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. It is our final installment of Mock Draft Monday here for the 2025 NFL draft season, and I could think of no way to land this plane than with our guy, The Athletic's Dane Brugler. Dane, what's going on, man?
Hey, we're under a week away, so we're at the 5-yard line, right? We're close to this draft, and as much as I love the process, I think, you know, we're ready for it to be here, because it's going to be a chaotic first round, and, you know, mock drafts are going to be up in flames, I think, pretty early this year, which, honestly, I'm okay with that. It means it's going to be a fun first round.
It's going to be a really fun first round. I can't wait to be doing it. I can't wait to be in the middle of all of it, and speaking of that, we have tons of great draft content here at Yahoo, but most importantly, Charles McDonald, Nate Tice, Jason Fitz, and myself will be doing a live draft show for the first round and the second and third round on Friday as well. So now's a great time to download the Yahoo Sports app before the NFL draft next week. We've added live activities on iOS. You can watch each draft pick come through directly on your lock screen, so you don't even have to open that thing up. That's pretty impressive. Check out the full draft coverage, grades, plus watch those two Thursday and Friday night draft live streams with your guys here right inside the Yahoo Sports app. You can download it on the App Store or at yahoosports.com/NFL draft. So, you know, you got the big broadcast going to be up. Dane, I know you guys are doing a draft show. People can have that on one screen. I mean,
there you go.
Dane, yeah. Everybody's got like
your phone,
or five screens.
Tablets, yeah. Laptop. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of good info to take in during all 3 days of the draft.
No excuses. Absolutely. Play like a champion. Okay. We've all watched. We've grinded the tape. We've grinded the 30 visits. We trained for this moment to be able to watch every single pick with every single live show here. But Dane, I'm really glad you're here to wrap this series up this week. We have a ton to get into. We're going to share your five favorite player to team fits from your latest mock, which I believe was a 7-rounder. That is the Lord's work right there. But before we do that, let's talk about when you were on the show last year, the fits that you gave out there, and just kind of take a look back. You had at number 18, the Cincinnati Bengals picking Byron Murphy. You had number 20, Pittsburgh Steelers, Graham Barton. Detroit Lions taking Marshawn Nealon, the edge out of Western Michigan. The Indianapolis Colts in the second round taking Ricky Pearsall, who I know I was a big fan of. You were a big fan of last year. He went a lot higher than that. And then at 56, kind of a juxtaposition you had the Dallas Cowboys taking Jonathan Brooks, but also you had them taking Tyler Guyton at 24. So that was the one you got here. You got one of them last year. Kind of any thoughts on Guyton's rookie year with the Cowboys and sort of where they're at from an offensive line build perspective?
Yeah, it was very up and down, obviously. And I think that was to be expected. And the Cowboys were in a weird spot where they actually traded back in the first round to get Guyton. I think they looked at their board and said, hey, we really like Graham Barton. We really like Guyton. There's a few players we like. So let's move back a little bit. Still able to get Guyton. They view him as still the left tackle of the future, even though that first year was a little bit rocky. But I think based off of some of the progress he showed going into year two, they have high expectations for him. And, you know, obviously with a lot of changes on that offensive line, they need Guyton to step up in a big way this year to protect Dak, help that offense stay together. You know, I think the Cowboys are going to be very active on offense this year. A lot of playmakers available. I think they're going to really try to add some juice to this offense, help inflate that scoreboard a little bit. But in order for all that to come to fruition, they need Guyton to kind of take that next step in year two.
Yeah, he's a pretty pivotal piece for them. And all of our eyes are on the running back spot. They obviously did not take Jonathan Brooks. He went to the Panthers in the second round in a trade-up scenario, which might be a little bit of buyer's remorse, unfortunately, with that pick, just because of what has happened from an injury standpoint with him. But the Cowboys did not secure that running back. They obviously let Rico Dowdle walk this offseason. Everybody's looking to see what they do at that position this year and, of course, at wide receiver. But you're right, man. If Tyler Guyton doesn't take that next step, all of that I won't say it could be for, you know, nothing, but it certainly won't reach the high potential that it could if Guyton doesn't take that next step. But let's get back to this year's draft. Let's focus in. Give me your first player to team fit that you absolutely love from your most recent mock.
So I'm going to start early. We're going to go Ashton Jeanty at number 5, Jacksonville Jaguars. And I think, you know, the popular places for him in the mock drafts are 6 to the Raiders, 10 to the Bears. Both those make perfect sense and very realistic. But should Ashton Jeanty get out of the top 5? And I think, you know, we've seen it before where maybe a running back wasn't a screaming need for a team in the first round, but they saw a chance to make a clear upgrade. And I think the most recent example is when Detroit, you know, no one was talking about running back for them a couple of years ago. DeAndre Swift, Jamal Williams, they were really entrenched as the starters, but they loved Jahmyr Gibbs. And they thought, okay, if we drop in this guy into our offense, what would that mean for just our overall impact? And obviously it worked out great. Ben Johnson in that offense, no regrets with what they did drafting Gibbs. It could be a similar situation with Jacksonville. You have a new head coach, new general manager, Travis Etienne playing on that fifth-year option in 2025. And I think he's a fine player, but I mean, his production has declined each of the last 3 years, just 3.7 yards per carry in 2024. I think there's a good chance that maybe this is last year in Jacksonville anyways. So if you have a chance to upgrade now with a superstar prospect like Jeanty, I think you jump at it, and then you can flip ETN for a day 3 pick. And I think that you like one of the top priorities for this offseason for this regime, this new head coach, new general manager, you want to help Trevor Lawrence, right? And so adding a player like Jeanty, I think it makes all the sense in the world. That Jacksonville, weirdly, you know, for a team that's picking top 5, they weirdly don't have a ton of just glaring needs. But mm-hmm. You could argue maybe they don't have, you know, they're missing a few playmakers. And Jeanty, I think, would help change that. So, again, the Raiders make sense, Bears make sense. But, man, I mean, more you look at it, and it's just not a great year to be picking 6 to 12 necessarily relative to other years. So if you have a chance to get a true premium blue chip talent in this class, if you're the Jaguars, I think you have to really think about that at 5.
Yeah, this is so interesting for a variety of different reasons. Number one, throughout the course of Mock Draft Monday, we've had, I think, Daniel Jeremiah. We've had others send Ashton Jeanty to the Raiders as one of their favorite player to team fits. But it feels like the streets have been rumbling of late, Dane, that this is a pick that could happen. Like I've seen this start to sort of crop up here. And I think it's for a couple different reasons. It's what you just mentioned there about the team needs, but also as smart draft folks like yourself have been saying all year, after the top 3 guys, if we include Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, and Abdul Carter there, like there's a drop off there. Like would Mason Graham, who's a pretty popular pick, and mm-hmm. I will ask you this, if Mason Graham was in a normal draft where there's a little bit more of those blue chippers, would he be like a guy that we'd be talking about as a 5th overall pick in a draft in any other year other than a class like this?
Yeah, historically, probably not. Like when I think of a top 5 defensive tackle, I think of Quinnen Williams, a true difference maker. And I like Mason Graham a lot. He doesn't really fit that profile. And I think Mason Graham's going to have a heck of an NFL career. But yeah, I think if there was a 1A pass rusher, a 1A corner here, that's a direction Jack should go. But do you take the 1B prospect when you have potentially a 1A guy like Jeanty just because he's a running back? I think that drafting top 5, you should be targeting players, not positions, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you need to get the true impact guys. And in this draft, Jeanty, like you mentioned it at the top with those top 3 guys with Cam Ward, Hunter, Abdul Carter, you could make an argument that if someone else should be in that top tier, it could be Jeanty. So I think, and even the Patriots at 4 should be considering Jeanty. But if he's on the board at 5 for the Jaguars, it makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been saying when it comes to the Raiders and Bears, the more popular picks, at some point you're just weighing significantly lower graded players against a guy who's going to come with a higher overall grade in Ashton Jeanty. But mm-hmm. What if that happens at 5? Like if that already starts at 5, some of these teams that are just trying to, I mean, Jacksonville just needs a hit here. And like James right. Gladstone and this staff, they got in pretty late, you know? So, I mean, that might not be a huge factor in why they'd take Jeanty, but it's just like, we just need to get on base with this pick. And obviously I think Jeanty can be a home run. By the way, you mentioned helping Trevor Lawrence. I think it goes under discussed just how bad this team has been at running the ball under the Doug Peterson era. Because I think we've been focused on, well, they overpaid Christian Kirk. We're like, the Calvin Ridley usage was a little weird that one year. Brian Thomas Jr. was awesome last year. We've been focused on the passing game, I think, because of Lawrence. But they rank 29th in average rushing success rate from 2022 to 2024. Like, this team has been terrible as a running unit, even though we all know the names of Travis Etienne and Tank Bigsby. They've never had a successful run game. So I think the only pushback to this is kind of harkening back to a conversation I had with Danny Heifetz last week. Is this, Dane, though, a little bit too much like the team needs to eat its vegetables and, you know, get their protein in, and this looks a little bit more like, hey, we're peeking at that dessert menu here by taking a running back at five?
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I think maybe the biggest argument is just the fact that this is such a loaded running back class. Like, you don't have do this. You feel really good about in the fourth round, you can come away with a player that you really like at the position. But I don't know. In the NFL, things can change so quickly. And when you have... If you think about, like, you know, the quarterback, receiver, running back, that trio of Trevor Lawrence, Brian Thomas Jr., Ashton Jeanty, I mean, that could be in a year from now, 2 years from now, we could be talking about that as competing with any other trio as among the best in the NFL on offense. And so, that type of spark to your offense, like, I don't know. Could you add another corner? Could you help the offensive line? Like, there's all these other ways they could go. But let's swing for the fences, you know. Let's see, and I think you look at past drafts. You know, the Raiders a couple years ago, how much better would they be now if they had drafted Bijan Robinson as opposed to Tyree Wilson? You know, in the top 10 that year. You know, like every year, you could probably go back and look, and there's opportunities to strike while you have a true impact talent in front of you. And I think for the Jaguars, it's all, you know, without having that true other blue chippers there. It's not like there's a, you know, like Micah Parsons was like the 12th overall pick. Like, there's no Micah Parsons in this draft, or, you know, Surtain was the ninth overall pick. Like, that's not this type of draft. So I think that where they're picking, it lines up with, if you're just going for impact potential, guys that can really move the needle and help impact not just the scoreboard, but the win-loss record, Jeanty can absolutely do that.
Yeah, and last thing I'll say on this too is that I just have this sneaking suspicion that Jacksonville looks at where they are right now. Again, new front office, new coaching staff, and offensive-driven coaching staff, and thinks, are we better off maybe if we can get our, instead of getting our both units from the basement to like average, what if we got our offense to maybe 9, 10, 11 overall in the league, which I think they should feel confident that they can do if Cohen has the juice. And I'm a big Cohen fan based on what he did last year and just the overall philosophies of that offense and the way they teach things, the way they implement things. I'm very high that he can do that. And getting Jeanty to do that is getting Jeanty in the mix here is going to help accomplish that, along with having a superstar in Brian Thomas Jr. Like, yeah, your defense. I'm not saying they're going to completely ignore defense in the draft. You know, I think they will take some guys along the way. But like Jeanty and a pass catcher in the second round, Dane, I kind of can squint at that offense and think, hey, we might be cooking with something here.
Yeah, exactly. With the new offensive identity that Cohen's going to bring, and why not lean into it? You know, you can always get better on defense. But like when you have a chance to really make a clear upgrade, I think you got to go for it. And it maybe, you know, for a general manager, you're a young general manager, first year in the job, would it be tough to take a running back with your first pick, a top five pick? I don't know, maybe. But I think this, you know, with Gladstone, I think he's much more open-minded to the idea as opposed to maybe some other general managers we've seen in the past. So, you know, I think it's at least very much a discussion point that should be had in that war room.
Yeah, the 34-year-old GM really dropping it on the table here in terms of just taking the running back at fifth overall. So I'm already kind of primed to get way too excited about the Jags just because I'm a big Cohen fan, and I love what Brian Thomas showed last year. Right. This really kind of cements it here. So, all right, let's move on to your second player to team fit here, Dane.
So let's go with Teteroa McMillan, number 9 to the New Orleans Saints. Ooh. And I think there's a good chance this pick ends up being defense. It's at least what a lot of teams think that the Saints are going to do. But I think in even offensive line, you know, it's the Ramczyk. We knew this was coming with Ramczyk. Unfortunately, the retirement's now right. official. So offensive line is always a possibility for them. You know, the Trevor Penning pick hasn't exactly worked out the way they thought. But I just keep coming back to T-Mac and just the overall impact it would make for that offense, whoever's at quarterback. So it, and in my opinion, he's a borderline top 10 pick in this draft. And I think the idea of dropping him on the Saints not only adds another playmaker, but it really helps the rest of that offense, specifically these other receivers. So Chris Olave, it helps Rashid Shaheed. It helps. And I know they signed Brandon Cooks, but let's give this offense a true X. Let's give them size on the outside. And, you know, like that's McMillan. I love the catch radius. Love how he attacks the football. You rarely, like, show me the film where the ball is getting into his body. Like, it just, he doesn't let that happen. So I really think that this could be somewhat of a skeleton key for the offense in terms of adding a guy like McMillan and how it unlocks a lot of other things for this Kellen Moore offense.
Yeah, I like this one too. By the way, I actually think there's a chance this pick could happen. Just based on what I've heard, I think they have a very high opinion of Tet McMillan here, or T-Mac. And I think that you made such a great point there. And I was talking with the guys from the Saints Block Party podcast this week. I was on their show earlier, and we talked about just how that adding McMillan here really sets the room in the right direction, because I love Chris Olave, but he's not an X receiver, and he had to kind of play a lot of X last year because it was a two wide receiver offense, and Rashid Shaheed's a guy that's going to move around the formation for you. And I mean, Olave has the press coverage skills and like the releases and all that to play X, but just as a size-based proposition, I always talk about this, Dane, and, you know, obviously charting receivers for reception perception, like, yeah, these guys can be open, but like, how many quarterbacks want to take that throw, even if they're open to the smaller receiver out on right. the boundary and things of that nature? I could tell you one quarterback who definitely doesn't like to take those throws, and he's the guy that the New Orleans Saints have paid a lot of money over the last couple of years. And I don't think he's playing quarterback for the Saints ever again. But nevertheless, just sort of a thought exercise here about just where Olave deploys best. Also, Olave is a guy that unfortunately we probably can't count on to play right. you know, 17 games consistently. Hopefully, like, that just no more concussions ever again, and it's just a past issue. But that's obviously something I think that has to be on the team's radar here. So McMillan at X, Olave as your flanker, and Shaheed as your speed slot. And I think you can do a lot with like the switch release stuff with Shaheed and Olave with the concepts in Kellen Moore's offense. You suddenly kind of got like a dangerous thing going here.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You could do, and you think about what Kellen Moore had in Philly with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. And I mean, they had a lot of weapons that you could really feed. And let's just keep adding weapons to this mix. And, you know, I again, we don't know who's going to be a quarterback. Hopefully, crossing our fingers that, you know, Chris Olave can come back healthy and be on the field for 16, 17 games. But yeah, that's no guarantee. So adding another playmaker that's going to make sure this offense doesn't completely fall off if Olave is not back, or if you're not getting above average quarterback play, which they might not, very much a wild card for them. So, I mean, I'm interested just to hear from you with McMillan. Like, do you have a comp for him that you really like of a pro player and his fit, what he might look like in the NFL?
I've been saying Courtland Sutton, honestly, since like the first three games that I charted of his. And from a prospect reception perception standpoint, they're actually pretty similar. Or I should say like the first couple years of Sutton's career, they're a little more similar than prospects, because obviously Sutton was like a day two draft pick. McMillan, right. I think, is a guy that I think is a first round receiver. Maybe not a tier one guy like some of the guys we saw last year, but a tier one player. The reason I like the comp is that I think he kind of belongs to the same family of receivers that Drake London does, but he's not quite Drake London to me. I think London was just a better prospect, in my opinion. But it's these big guys that separate better than you think, and they can do a lot of damage on these in-breaking routes. And I mean, Sutton is a guy last year who was the number one receiver for an offense that outkicked its expectations. But I think it's probably best if he's your really, really good number two. And I think McMillan is probably best if he's your really, really good number two. And in this scenario with Olave there, I think those guys can kind of share that who's the 1A and who's the 1B title and provide a really dynamic duo. So that's Courtland Sutton comp has just stood out to me. He's probably a little bit better after the catch than Courtland Sutton is at this stage of Sutton's career, but he was much more of a playmaker early on prior to that ACL tear.
Yeah, I like that. And I think you just hit on something that's key is I don't think McMillan gets enough credit for how good he is after the catch. I mean, he had 28 forced missed tackles this past season, which was third and among all FBS receivers. He just has a slipperiness to him after the catch. And so that first and foremost, he's a ball winner. And so you love that about him. But he does give you a little bit after the catch, especially for a player that maybe you don't look at as a true, you know, he's not a burner. We know that. But, you know, we don't think of him as a speed guy. But he has this slipperiness to him that helps him get more yardage than maybe he should. And part of that's Big 12 tackling. But part of that is is the player, too. And he's a really good player. So, yeah, no, I like that. Sutton makes sense. You know, obviously T. Higgins and what he does at the catch point. T-Mac is not as long necessarily. But still, you see that volleyball background, the basketball background, with the way that he will go up, high point it. He'll catch it off his shoe top. So, yeah, and it's interesting when you compare it to last year's class, because obviously last year was just so top heavy. And, you know, the grades that I gave to, you know, last year, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers had almost identical grades at the top. And then Roma Dunze, then Brian Thomas Jr. McMillan would be behind Brian Thomas Jr. in terms of the grade that I gave these receivers. But in this class, that's a borderline top 10, top 12 type of pick. And if he doesn't go 9 to the Saints, I think the Cowboys will be waiting and more than willing to turn that card in to pair him with C.D. Lamb and what that could mean for Dak and that offense. So now we'll see. I mean, teams are definitely split on McMillan if he fell a little bit further. It's possible. I'd be a little surprised. But, you know, that's one of the different ways that this draft could go next Thursday.
What's the main nature of the split to you? Because that's obviously been sort of the theme with his draft process. But when coming into it, it's like, oh, he's a locked, you know, maybe top five, top 10 pick in this draft. And now there's been a little bit of that slippage. Kind of what do you think is the main cause of that?
I think just the fact that he's not a and I don't know why, like, you know, because we knew he wasn't a burner. Like, so him running a 4.53 at the pro day, like, it's actually not a bad time for him. And
yeah, I thought that was like good enough that we don't have to care about it, honestly. Like, we don't have to pretend to care.
If you watch his film, you see he's not someone that's just winning with pure speed. Because he is a little bit raw as a route runner, he's not you don't think of him like as a power forward type of receiver in terms of his physicality. Like, he's not overly finesse, but he's probably more finesse than truly aggressive, just in terms of the way he is going to attack defensive backs in the NFL. And there's just a big jump between the Big 12 and what he'll face in the NFL. But I don't think that those things will stop him from being a productive pro. I mean, I think you take all of his strengths as a player, and it will help overshadow some of the other areas where maybe he's just not as polished just yet.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I'm also pretty similar with you if he was in last year's class, he'd be just right behind Brian Thomas Jr. from my like stacked board here, the last few receiver classes. But all right, let's get to your third player to team fit here.
All right, let's go to the Cincinnati Bengals at 17. And I gave them Derek Harmon, defensive tackle, Oregon. The Bengals, we know, need help on defense in the worst way. And I think you could make a case that it should be the pass rush, should be the linebackers, should be the secondary. Above all, they just need a playmaker on defense and someone that's going to change the equation about how offenses are going to prepare for that Bengals defense. And to me, Derek Harmon could potentially be one of those guys. 6'4.5", 315 pounds, 34.5-inch arms, was under 5 seconds in the 40-yard dash. And I think above all, when I'm scouting defensive linemen, give me the guys that hate to be blocked. Above all. And I think that's what you get with Derek Harmon. I think that's how you sum him up. He did, like, I liked what he did at Michigan State. Then he transfers to Oregon, lost some weight, and was even better this past year for the Ducks. He was the most disruptive interior lineman in college football last year. And that showed on the tape. It also showed in the stat sheet. He had more pressures than any other defensive tackle in the FBS. So love the versatility. He can play a one technique, play the three, play the five, can play all three downs. He would give Cincinnati just a dude on that defensive line. And generally, this is a team that doesn't really draft defensive tackles in the first round. Like, I'm always paying attention to those type of trends. And, you know, certain general managers like to go a certain way in the first round, or maybe they avoid a certain position. The Bengals have only drafted defensive tackle in the first round once since 1978. So this is not a position they generally draft early. The only time they did it in the last you know, almost 50 years was Big Daddy Dan Wilkinson, number one overall in 1994. But it, to me, I don't know. They're due. They that should not stop them from going with a defensive tackle like this, like Harmon, who is so disruptive in a lot of different ways. And like I said, just they need a dude on defense. And I think he could potentially give them one.
I feel like the guys who aren't grouped as, you know, kind of potential top 10 picks at the defensive line position, and they could really, like, we look back in 3 years and be like, man, these are some of the best mm-hmm. players of this class, or probably like Derek Harmon and Walter Nolan too. I think Nolan is a little bit, yeah, Nolan's a little bit more of a wild card to me, for a lot of different reasons. But right. with Derek Harmon, man, yeah, he's really fun to watch. He's a badass. He's a guy that, like you said, could be the dude, could be the tone setter of this team, which they, I mean, desperately need. Like, what is the Bengals' defensive identity right now other than like a carnival, basically? It's just that, right. that's it. Right. With Harmon there, I also think he would be potentially sort of a guy that has a good downstream effect, because he's obviously going to be disruptive on his own. But if he becomes a guy that kind of can keep bodies off linebackers, because that was something that just, like, watching the Bengals last year, I mean, they did a lot of problems on defense other than Trey Hendrickson, but just guys are, like, offensive linemen are getting to the second level so easy. They obviously got the guy from the guy from Green Bay, who's more of like keep the bodies fresh. I think actually would fit well with Derek Harmon here. Yeah, Slayton, TJ yeah. Slayton. That's correct. You keep some bodies off of him. That also could right. be good for Derek Harmon on plays where he's just trying to shoot gaps. But even against the run, like, we got two guys in here now. We got some beef that actually can keep bodies off of our linebackers.
Yeah, and it'll help. You know, they drafted Chris Jenkins on day True. Two last year. Like, that'll help his development, where only so much will be asked of him. So, you know, you work him into the rotation. And so, yeah, 100%. It's kind of like we were talking about with T-Mac and the Saints, you know, the domino effect of not just the player you're adding, but the impact on the rest of that positional unit, how it's going to help everybody. So, yeah, I think in this draft, Mason Graham's my top defensive tackle, and then Derek Harmon's number two. I mean, I think I love both these players. Maybe not as true top 10 type of guys, but middle sure. of the first round, really impactful, useful players that should play for a long time. And Nolan, I think, is in that mix as well. If, you know, if you are confident in what you're getting snap in, snap out with Nolan, he has a potential to be that type of guy as well. And you look at the Niners at 11, but there's several teams in the teens and the mid first round who will be looking for defensive line help. And so wouldn't be shocked to see any of these guys go as early as, 10, 11, that type of range. But for the Bengals sitting there at 17, if one of them were to be available, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, typically we're not saying, hey, the sexy positions are, you know, the defensive tackles, like, where are these guys going to land? But I'm very right. excited to see where both of these two are going to land, because I think there's a chance that both those guys could outkick their draft position. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll get some more of Dane's favorite player to team fits right after this. All right, we're back. Dane, give us your fourth favorite player to team fit from your most recent mock draft.
Okay, going to go to the Green Bay Packers at 23 and go with Will Johnson, corner from Michigan. And look, there's going to be a few wild cards.
Will Johnson, interesting.
Yeah. And we've talked about a few wild cards. You know, McMillan could potentially be a wild card if he gets past 12. Shadur is the ultimate wild card, obviously. You know, we're going to be on Shadur watch throughout the entire first round. But
Dane, I was at the gym today, and all they were talking about on ESPN was just, it was all Shadur. Like, there are no other players in this draft. Yeah. So just, I don't know if you're aware of this, but no other players.
I was going to say February, March, April, it's just kind of been the same playbook. And look, I get it. And it will be fascinating. I think NFL might be secretly rooting for the Giants to pass at 3 just because the ratings and how what that would do. But look, Will Johnson's another one of these guys, another wild card who, like, and he's a good player, just under 6'2", 195 pounds, really, you know, quick feet, quick transitions, has a good feel for timing, has a good feel for finding the football. The big question has always been the speed. I mean, even going back to when he was a recruit, he was a 5-star recruit, but there were still questions because he wouldn't run the 40. They didn't have verified times on him coming out of high school. And so, you know, recruiters and schools would get annoyed that they didn't have those verified times. Fast forward to the draft process now, it's the same thing. And so not a big surprise. I mean, I mentioned this in the fall, mentioned it in January. Will Johnson's run his last 40 in his life. He'll never run one ever again. yeah. And you can take the GPS numbers, but I think when you do, it's usually the GPS numbers from his pick sixes. And so he's kind of get a little bit of a head start. He's got, you know, he's kind of opened up the gate a little bit. And so the GPS numbers look okay. But in coverage, you can see the average speed. It becomes an issue at times. And I think that will matter to some teams more than most. Teams that primarily run a lot of zone, maybe it won't be as much of an issue. But at what point do you just say, look, I don't care about the speed questions. He has good tape. He was a big part of Michigan winning the national championship back in 2023. As long as you're okay with the medicals, and that's another part of this, is some teams are pretty worried about just the medical part of this. So as long as the doctors give you two thumbs up with health and durability, Packers could be one of those spots where it's just like, all right, this is a fit for both sides, and we're not going to let him fall another spot. I don't know if Gutekunst would draft a first-round corner without having a verified time. That's maybe a little bit of a – it might not work, but just thinking about what Will Johnson would mean for that secondary immediately and help kind of, again, the domino effect of helping everybody else in that secondary. And then you think about it, Quinyon Mitchell, a lot of people thought he was going to go top 15, top 20. He lasts until 22, and who knows if the Eagles win the Super Bowl without what his contributions last year. So, again, it's not just the speed questions, it's the durability questions, the injuries. That's some of the question marks. But what that means is that there could be a playoff team that ends up getting a pretty nice steal if Will Johnson lasts until the 20s.
Yeah, I think there's two conversations to have here, which is one, Will Johnson with the Packers, but Will Johnson falling this far, which I mean, I don't root for any players to fall, but I'm glad that you've brought this up here because if only because it validates me, Dane, because Nate and I did a spicy, medium and mild prediction show for Football 301. Mm-hmm. And one of my, I think it was like my medium prediction or something like maybe even been spicy. I don't remember, but who knows what happened last week? Who knows what happened yesterday, bro? But one of my predictions was that a non-Travis Hunter cornerback would go ahead of Will Johnson. And to me, that's Jahdae Barron. I think Barron is going to have a lot of fans in the league and somebody's going to really like him. But part of it was mostly just that I think Will Johnson could fall in this draft because of all the reasons that you outlined there. I mean, obviously I've watched a lot of receivers the last 2 years, and even some of them I do think have taken advantage of the speed questions for Will Johnson. Shoot, even like I had to go back to a 2022 game for Torrey Horton, who I'm a huge fan of, by the way, and I think you are as well based on reading The Beast. If you haven't gotten The Beast yet, I mean, I don't even know what you're doing listening to this show. Do you love the NFL draft? Like, you should have gotten The Beast with your Athletic subscription by now. So
appreciate that,
pop that in and get that. So I've seen your rankings of the receivers there. I think you're a fan of Horton as well. But yeah, I went back and watched the damn 2022 Torrey Horton against Michigan game. And I'm like, there's a couple plays here. Like, it's not like he had a massive game, but there's a couple plays where I feel like the speed does show up for Will Johnson. So it's not just a 40-yard dash thing. I do think this fall could happen. All that being said, though, if he goes to the right spot where they play a lot of zone coverage, and I was a little surprised that they played so much zone coverage last year with Jeff Hafley with the Green Bay Packers, it could end up being he fell on draft day, big whoop. It ends up actually being a really good thing for him in the long term.
Right, exactly. Like, at the end of the day, just it matters more where you go, not when. You know, we've seen that time and time again, where maybe you're a little disappointed because you went 5, 7, 10 picks later than you were hoping. But if you go to a better team, a better situation, I mean, at the end of the day, that's all that matters. Like, I don't, Quinyon Mitchell probably didn't love going 22 when there was a chance he could have gone top 15. But you know what? He's got the hardware on his finger right now that I don't think he cares all that much.
Yeah.
So yeah, Will Johnson could be in one of those cases, and it will be interesting to see. You know, he could go 11 to the Niners, and I don't think anybody would really bat an eye. Like, you would understand it, but if he does start to slip a little bit. You know, the Bengals at 19, maybe you could say they could use a corner there. And there's once we get to the 20s and the playoff teams, there's several teams that could use a corner. Mm-hmm. So where does it become? Hey, we don't care that he doesn't have a 40. The medicals we're okay with them. You know, like, let's stop this drop right now and add a good player. So it'll be, he's definitely one of those wild cards. Shador is going to have, he's going to captain the wild card team on night one, but Will Johnson's one of those guys as well.
It's good that we're talking about this, because then our viewers, listeners, when they're sitting there on Thursday night and like, hey, what the hell is going on with Will Johnson? If this happens, they've kind of gotten a preparation for it. And corner is a wild card position in general, man, because it's just so scheme specific. Like, for as much as I say, a wide receiver is not a wide receiver, like, these guys are all so different, you can obviously say that for the guys that have to guard those wide receivers as well. Not every team is going to see cornerback the same way from a scheme perspective. But all right, let's get your fifth and final favorite player to team fit.
Okay, I went with the Washington Commanders at 29, Emeka Ebuka, wide receiver, Ohio State. And I think most Commanders fans are focused on pass rusher here at 29, and totally understand. And there's a pretty good chance it could end up being pass rusher, especially when you look at the guys that'll be available this late first round range. It makes sense. But in my mock, I went with Ebuka because he's as close to a pro receiver without actually playing a down in the NFL. Like, he 6'1", 201 pounds, okay speed. He was 4.48 in the 40-yard dash, but he's just a very natural receiver. He's a fourth-year senior at Ohio State, so played a lot. You think about all the receiver talent that has gone through Columbus. Nobody had more career catches than Ebuka, which is also interesting when you factor in he was probably never the best receiver on the roster in any of his 4 years. That first year, Garrett Wilson, the last two with Marvin Harrison Jr., and then this past year with Jeremiah Smith, he was always kind of a secondary option compared to what else was on the roster, but he's still a really good player. And you look at the movements, the catch point skills, the toughness, both as a, the way he finishes grabs, but also as a blocker that shows up. He's not a tackle breaker necessarily, but he's not someone that's going to really take the top off a defense. But that's why you have Terry McLaurin, right? And right. Debo Samuel might be one and done in DC. We'll see about how that plays out. But let's get Jaden Daniels more help. Let's build out this receiver depth chart. And adding an Ohio State receiver worked out for the Commanders pretty recently with McLaurin. Let's go back to that well.
Yeah, like, it was nice that Jaden Daniels showed he could ball with dudes like Noah Brown and Deami Brown and
both Jameson Crow.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, and all those guys are gone. That doesn't mean he's got to do it, right? That doesn't mean that we need to have that happen every single year. Why not give him a lot of options out in the route? And yeah, I'm with you. I think Debo is probably one and done in DC. I just don't think he has that much left, honestly, but you had the cap space, so who cares if you're paying him, whatever the money was. And that shouldn't stop you from adding a really cheap receiver here at the end of the first round. And I freaking love this guy, man. I've talked a lot about it on the show. He's just such a good zone beater. You're going to get a lot of zone coverage because of the quarterback that you have there. And yeah, like, the shot play is not available to McLaurin. I love, like, in the intermediate area, Ibuka's just going to be right where he's supposed to be. He's going to catch everything. I think there's going to be such good synergy between him and Jaden Daniels. And it's funny, actually, because I hadn't thought about this fit, honestly, because I've just kind of forgotten about receiver for the Commanders because they add Debo. And, Debo's such a singular thing. I probably shouldn't have let it slip out of my mind. But when free agency was going on and before it became obvious that Chris Godwin was going to go right back to Tampa Bay, I thought the best place for Chris Godwin to land was Washington Commanders, because they need to get somebody over the middle of the field, Dane, and they are a team that wants to run the ball. Their run game kind of withered at the end of last year. They need, like, that tough physical presence. I feel like Ibuka could give them, maybe not Chris Godwin, but sort of in that, again, that same family of wide receivers.
Yeah, I like that. That makes sense. And yeah, there's a lot of subtle areas to his game that maybe don't scream like superstar, but he's just really good. It's football IQ, it's toughness. For example, when the field shrinks in the red zone, he's really good at finding space. And of his 24 career touchdowns in college, 15 of them came in the red zone. So, like, he does it's just a lot of subtle things that he does as a receiver. And, you know better than just about anybody how some of those subtleties are the difference. It's not just, are you bigger, faster? It's almost like a dance, understanding the detailed nuance of playing the position. And Ibuka does a lot of that will translate quickly. It's this is not a draft and develop type of guy. He is wrapped in clear wrapping paper. So, exactly the type of guy you're getting and how it will impact the game. And so I think if, yeah, if you're the Commanders, you know, they don't, I believe they don't have a third round pick, but they have their second round pick. So yeah, if you feel like you can, yeah, and this is a pretty decent edge rush group where you feel like in the second round, you can, you know, whether it's Femi Oladejo or Tui Amalo from Ohio State, like there's a lot of good edge rushers where you feel like you could maybe wait a little bit, go and help your quarterback in the first round. I think it should be more of an option than maybe some Commanders fans are giving it consideration right now.
I think the fact that you, the point you made there about him being just ready to go out of the package is pretty critical for a team that went to the damn NFC Championship game last year and probably would like to be back there, you know, and maybe get to the next step this season. So I love that
point. On a rookie deal. Yeah, like this is the time to strike is not 2-3 years from now. It's right now. And you have a target on your back now. There's no sneaking up on anybody.
No.
So let's help our quarterback. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why CJ Stroud had a little bit of a sophomore slump. You know, it wasn't one thing, even though maybe it was the offensive line. But what you need to do, whatever you can to help avoid that with Jaden Daniels. You know, defensive coordinators had all offseason to really go back and look and see, all right, well, this is how we can attack him here. Like, okay, let's keep changing the offense a little bit. Keep upgrading. Keep making things a little bit better so we're keeping the rest of the NFL on their toes.
Oh, man, I'm pretty jacked up about this fit now here at this point. It was not one that I considered at all for Igbuka, but I just, you know, people complain about the upside with him, or, you know, he's always been a number two. He's got the same skill set, and I've said this 1,000 times, he's got the same skill set as Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't hear anybody complaining about the upside of St. Brown when he pushes to lead the damn league and catches every single year. So Dane's got me pretty juiced up about this one here. We're going to take our final break. We come back, we're going to get Dane's stand on the table prospect for the 2025 NFL Draft right after this. All right, we are back, and it is time. The people are dying to know who is Dane Brugler's stand on the table prospect for the 2025 NFL Draft.
Captain, my captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson.
We have Bills Mafia here.
Let's go!
Dane, this is your guy. You're going to stand on the table for a prospect. I'm sure you probably actually, how many players are in the beast? Like 1,000, 2,000? I mean,
just over 2,600. Yeah, so there's quite a few. Quite a few options to choose from here.
I mean, that's, God bless you, bro. You're a hell of a worker. So there's no question about that. Nobody can question your credentials. So you probably sit here and give us a lot of prospects you might want to stand at the table for out of those, you know, 2,600. But who is the one that you're picking for this segment?
So I'm going outside, maybe someone that's going to go in the first round, and okay, very early on day two, someone that I would definitely be targeting, Jalen Knoll, Iowa State. And look, going back to the fall and studying, because, you know, I watched both these guys in the summer, liked both of them. I'm talking about Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll. But in the fall, just talking to scouts about these guys, Higgins had the higher grades from NFL scouts. He's 6'4". He can run. Yeah. He's productive. So, I mean, you kind of understand why Higgins would be kind of, okay, the traits are just separating the two. But I just kept coming back to Knoll as my favorite of the two guys because of the way he can stress a defense. And it's, you know, he's a speedy athlete. He can be a vertical slot. He can uncover underneath, be a catch and go type. Very efficient in and out of his breaks. He has a pull away gear. He accounted for 8 catches of 50 plus yards the last 2 years. Top three in the FBS the last 2 years. So he's not a big target, you know, but he's not, I wouldn't call him small either. Like, he's very sturdy and he catches the ball really well outside of his frame. Yeah. So I mean, I likened him to a better version of Christian Kirk when he was coming out as a prospect, and just inside outside can do different things. And I did a control C in the beast and typed in quarterback friendly and to see how many prospects I said that about in a draft guide. 2 receivers popped up, Igbuka and Knoll. And yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. Those are the two players in this class that I would say that about. So I don't know, somewhere early to mid second round, I think a team's going to get a really good receiver. And I mean, I look at the Patriots who, they passed on an undersized target last year in Ladd McConkey, who maybe they viewed as a slot-only type of guy. Knoll can be the McConkey mea culpa, where he doesn't have ideal size. You might look at him as a slot player, best in the slot. But when you focus on his other strengths, I think it's someone that you can easily get on board with.
so funny, Dane, that you mentioned Ladd McConkey, because I wrote in his reception perception profile this year for Jalen Knoll that in terms of a success rate versus man coverage perspective in last year's class, the guy he is closest to, 74.1% for Jalen Knoll, 74.6% for Ladd McConkey. And that was why I just hammered the point last year. Ladd is not a slot only guy. And he's certainly not a pop gun slot receiver type. And whenever I talk slot receivers, there's like three kind of labels I throw at him. They're either the power slot, shout out Nate Tice, the power slot, the vertical slot, or the pop gun slot receiver. And it's like kind of that last one's more of the pejorative term. And neither of these guys are that, right? Like Jalen Knoll is absolutely a guy who can rip it downfield. We saw Ladd McConkey thrive in the intermediate area for the LA Chargers. Actually had a higher yards per route run figure on the outside than he did on the inside, believe it or not. Like, he was just that good. I think Jalen Knoll can be that guy as well. We actually have him ranked the exact same too, looking at your rankings in the Beast. Just, I have Travis Hunter ranked as a wide receiver. I'm sure you'd have him number one as a wide receiver. Knoll's my sixth guy. He'd be your sixth guy in that scenario as well. So we are pretty simpatico on this one. I love this player. The player comparison I actually gave him, because I've seen Christian Kirk, obviously Ladd McConkey, like I said, there's some comparisons there from a success rate versus man coverage standpoint. But his whole total reception perception profile, because you mentioned he's good in the contested catch area. He's good, you know, kind of working the ball off of his frame, catching it in traffic and things of that nature, being good in the intermediate and vertical area, was Josh Downs from a couple of classes ago. And Downs was like this guy for me where,
he was underdrafted big time.
It's a crime. It's disgusting what happened with Josh Downs where, he went 79th overall, I think, in that draft. And I had him as wide receiver five in that class. I think I actually might have had him four ahead of Quentin Johnston. So these are the type of guys that end up falling through the cracks. And Knoll is actually bigger and a bit better of paper testing athlete than Josh Downs was.
Right. No, and that's a great call. I mean, I think Downs was a top 50 guy for me that year. So, I mean, I'm right there with you. And Knoll is, he's 5'10", 195 pounds. So, shorter than ideally you want, but he's not small necessarily. He doesn't play small. And I also love about him how, the tape is great, the production's great, the stats both as a senior this past year and then just over his career. But then he goes to the Senior Bowl. He was the best receiver I saw at the Senior Bowl, just in terms of getting open and finishing catches. And then he goes to the combine and absolutely crushes it. The combine, 4.39 40, 41.5-inch vert, 6.823 cone. I mean, are you kidding me? Just ridiculous numbers that it's like, all right, matching up. The workouts were great with him. So it's just check box, check box, check box. And you run out of reasons why this guy shouldn't be higher on the board and in the rankings. And I mean, I took some heat maybe a month and a half ago when I tweeted that he was a top five receiver for me in this draft. He would be number six ahead Travis Hunter in the receiver rankings. And that was not a very loved opinion, which I was kind of surprised. Like, there were a lot of people pushing back on that. But I mean, I'm glad you're seeing the same things I do, because this is just a fun player who is going to make it in the NFL. And hopefully, I want to see him land. Like, I'd love to see him land. And, speaking about Josh Downs and Drake May together at North Carolina.
Right.
I'd love to see him with Drake May in New England and, to see how that would work. It would be interesting to see where Higgins goes too. Like, if the Patriots wanted more size, I could see them going Higgins over Knoll. But it'll be interesting though, as we look back in 2-3 years, to see, was that the right move? Should they have gone with Knoll in that situation? It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I much prefer Knoll to Higgins, just because Higgins, I know who Jalen Knoll is. I know the role he should play. And if he lands with the right quarterback, Drake May is a great call, obviously, because we see in proof of concept. The same way with Justin Herbert, they can take it, they are accurate, but also can drive the ball to these tighter windows with these vertical slot players. That would, again, that's the way you maximize the production of this player, like we saw with Ladd McConkey last year. But either way, they're going to be good NFL receivers that help you as a slot receiver. I know who Jalen Knoll is. Higgins, I struggle with just because he doesn't separate to the level that I'd want to see from a perimeter receiver to be a high volume guy. So he's kind of falls in this bucket of players that, over the course of reception perception history, that are sub 35th percentile success rate versus man and press. They're typically, if those guys, they move into the slot to be that power slot player, they can thrive. But not every team, you know this, Dane, like you can have an opinion about a prospect, but then not every team is going to share that opinion. I mean, shoot,
right.
Keon Coleman was this guy for me last year. He goes to the Bills and never played in the slot. So it just, right. It is what it is. But yeah, I'm glad we're both on the same page here with Jalen Knoll, man, because he's such a fun player. So we're standing on the table with this one together here, Dane. I think that's a great way to end the series here. Dane, I could not thank you more for your time. Really appreciate it, man. I know you have 1,000 things you probably got to do here as you're just waiting and counting down the hours to actually get to the NFL draft. But if for some reason the people out there are not familiar with your work, they haven't checked out The Beast, where can they find it this year?
I appreciate it, Matt. The pleasure is all mine. It's fun doing this exercise with you. Yeah, you can find all my stuff on The Athletic. The Beast is out. It's the one-stop draft guide to have if you want NFL verified testing information for 2,600 players. A lot of good background nuggets. Of course, all the analysis, strengths, weaknesses. So try to be as comprehensive as possible. And I make sure it lives up to the name of The Beast. If you're going to call it something like that, it better live up to it. And I think it does. And we've got a pretty cool interface this year. So it's still a PDF if you want to download it that way, but it's also interactive on the site. And so you can find it on The Athletic. I promise if you're a casual draft fan or a diehard, you won't be disappointed that you have it by your side now and then, obviously, the 3 days of the draft.
Not that you need my validation, but I will tell you, like, and I'm sure the sickos out there love getting the PDF, and you know, probably I'm sure you've gotten pictures of people printing it out and all the true psycho stuff. That's great. Yeah. I will tell you for YouTube here, people could see it. Like, I'm sure that's fantastic. I will tell you for my purposes, huge shout out to you and what I know is an entire team effort there to make the digital version this year. That has been absolutely awesome to have up as I'm working through some of these day three receivers that I'm charting here at the last minute that probably will never do anything in the NFL. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, let me get a quick little look at these guys. Like, what Dane thinks. All right, this is somebody I need to get to. Like, all right, I got to make sure I get a Ty Felton report up here on receptionperception.com. So shout out to you for all of that, Dane. It's fantastic work. People should definitely check that out. And make sure you check out, as you're watching our draft show, check out what the guys on The Athletic are doing as well. That is going to do it for today's show. Tomorrow, yes, we're dusting him off. Yeah, the old man. No more baseball nonsense for Andy Behrens. It's time to lock into the NFL. He is going to join me live at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Just watch on YouTube. As we wish cast the best fantasy landing spots for the top skill position prospects in this year's NFL draft. Until then, we are out.